I'm Marie Lutz. I'm the Equal Opportunity Officer at CUI, the Hamburg Center for Ultrafast Imaging, and I'm very happy to welcome you to our new podcast format. As you might guess, this podcast will deal with equal opportunity. Well, throughout my daily work at CUI, I have the great chance to meet many interesting, smart, and unconventional thinking people who are all, in some way or the other, working with topics connected to equal opportunity. With our different programs and events at CUI, we introduce these people to you to offer you new impulses and widen your perspective on what equal opportunity wants to achieve, why it has become such a big topic in today's science, and why that is a pretty important and good thing to have. So, to give you even more to think about and present these people and ideas to you, we are thrilled to start with our very first episode. And what is this episode going to be about? Back in spring, Professor Thomas Brage visited Hamburg to give a talk on Objectivity is All That Matters, the dynamics of gender in science and physics. And I was lucky enough to have some time and sit with him before his talk. All right, Thomas, how about you introduce yourself?
Oh, God.
What do you want to know? I'm professor of physics in Lund. I've been there for 20 years, and my main interests are in physics. I'm doing laboratory astrophysics and computational atomic physics. But for the last 10, 15 years, I've been working on gender and science. And I was on the Lund scene doing a couple of projects. Anti-discrimination education and gender certification, core values projects. But also I'm working quite a lot now in Europe, traveling around and giving talks like I will do here. And also in the League of European Research Universities, I've been in their steering group for gender.
So let me ask this question. Didn't you have enough to do with your physics? Like, how come you decided to take on this huge topic and project of equal opportunity?
Yeah, that's the great thing. People often complain of being in academia, but you also have a lot of freedom of defining what you want to do. And it's very exciting when you can find a new field. Now, in the beginning, it wasn't that planned. It was, as usual, you get put in some sort of policy group or so, and we were supposed to work out an action plan against harassment. And then after a while, we became interested in why are we only writing plans and policies? This is 15 years ago. And started to look into the operational work. And then I got more and more curious. And later on, the question appeared, what is it with physics that is making it so empty of women, so gendered in its culture and in its history? So becoming more and more theoretical. But my main task is try to understand gender science and kind of translate it for scientists, physicists. And so that's my goal.
So for scientists who may be more used to working with figures, working with numbers, and then less into the sociology side, or what is your main field of translation there?
Yeah, I mean, gender science is covering so many different fields. Yeah, there are historians, there are psychologists, anthropologists, social scientists. So, yes, one of the things you have to do is to change your idea about what is knowledge and become a bit more wider in that definition and understand that what we do is reducing things to single answer, but maybe finding a problem or problematize is also knowledge. Yeah, so it's that. And then, of course, in each subject we have a language and a way of talking about it that is evolved inside the subject, and therefore it's remarkably hard sometimes to understand the other side of things.
Would you say that there's even a language for gender in physics yet?
Well, the problem why it hasn't been having so much to do with each other is the idea of physics and maths being free of any culture, and therefore we don't need to think about these things. But that's because we're defining our subjects in a way that limit it to what you could call facts or theorems and experiments. But I mean, of course, physics and maths are so much more. And if you think about the teaching of the subjects, you have to involve also the use of them, how they are produced, what is their responsibility of the researcher, and so on and so forth. And then if you start to think like that, you realize that, of course, there is many places where sociology can help physics to find the answers.
Now that you've done this work for a couple of years, Did your emphasis in your science also shift a lot?
That's a very good question, and one should never do research on yourself, I guess, but it's very hard. But I think my field of physics is it's very pure physics. But in my doing research, in my way of working with students and postdocs and PhDs and so on, I hope it makes a difference. At least I've become aware of that there are structures and maybe try to work against those structures. When you practice your physics, I think you are, of course, affected by the fact that you put on gender glasses. I mean, you see those structures and you would be very cold-hearted if you didn't, so to speak, try to work against them in daily life. When you promote people, when you support people, when you choose who, if you have the power or opportunity to choose collaborators, that you think about these things and try to work against the bias that works against certain people. And it could be gender or it could be ethnicity or whatever, but I hope it affects me, and I'm sure it does.
You talked about putting on the gender glasses. So can you give me an example of one thing where the gender glasses, so to speak, really opened up a new image to you looking at physics?
Oh, God, that's hard.
You can also give me three.
No, but one exercise I did myself and I always recommend people to do is, like, you know, the one sitting on a meeting, and a meeting that you're not very interested in, and that happens a lot in our life. And then just take a piece of paper and then make notes on how many times different people get interrupted, how many times different people get their ID promoted, and how many times certain people support each other and so on. And it's very clear. We've even had gender equality meetings, and you see the men is taking so much more space, and how we are trained to interrupt. But then I saw that women actually do this. They not only get interrupted, they let themselves be interrupted, because it's a social kind of play. Oh, God, we get used to this game, and then you can never stop seeing it when you see this way power works. And then you start to look into more structural things, who gets promoted and what kind of work different people do. And then, yeah, then you have to live with the gender glasses, so I'm afraid.
Thomas, when it comes to equal opportunities, always the question for also fast solutions and fast results. Mm. Would you say that there have been results or developments throughout the last 15 years? Like, what has really changed so far?
I wish I could say it's been a tremendous change, but this is like the paradox that we have been working so much on this, but there is, I think we still haven't penetrated the very strong resistance that in the end stops progress. We do, it is a progress, of course, and I can see more and more that leaders, both on the international and the national and the local level, are understanding, and that's a big progress. When I started with this and I came to different groups and I said we should talk about gender equality, everybody was like sighing and rolling their eyes. That has stopped. And I think that is a good thing. I mean, people are more, and in natural science, I should say, curious. Most people are curious and want to understand that there is something here and we need to do something about it. But in the end of the day, when it comes to making change, it's about changing power, or taking power away from some people, to be blunt, and giving it to other people, and that will meet resistance. And I think there is a lot now coming in research. I know in Norway there are groups working on identifying resistance and how to counteract resistance, and I think that's where we have to go.
Thomas, if you could wish for one thing, what would be one of the most let's say, effective changes that the culture of physics could use to promote equal opportunity to get us there?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, I think one very important change that affects physics a lot, since physics is so masculinized, so to speak, it would be to change academia into a modern working place, finally. Washing out some of the old ideas of what it is to have an academic career, tell the truth about how you are an efficient worker, not being one that works all the time, but being one that works very regular times. If you get to that, and I'm not saying that women are better in one setting, I think that minoritized groups fit in better in that. And I mean, then you can also easier combine family and work, which in most of Europe is a big problem. And that's burdening women more than men. Also then, in that process, one should change how we look at merits and be aware of that merits, the way we measure merits now are gendered. So reforming the institutes would help all academic subjects, but subjects that are so extreme when it comes to gender balance, like physics, would be even more helped by that, I think. Within physics, I think we need to talk about what is excellence, what subjects are good physics, where should the money go, and why do the money go the way it does? And that is obviously gendered, we know that.
What do you mean by that, that is gendered?
The choices of excellent fields are done by men to men. You can look at research done on science foundations and so on. So if you can change to saying these are excellent fields, let's get women into that. Maybe you should say, what do women want to do? Who is choosing? I got a wonderful example of an answer. There was someone asking Londa Schiebinger when she was in Lund. This professor said, you know, I'm working with curiosity-driven research, so I think there should not be any outside influence. Curiosity should drive it. And Londa said, who's curiosity? Who has the right to be curious? Should it be the single man? How do you pick that? So now we're in a very dangerous minefield of academic freedom, but whose freedom? I think if we start to look at that, and I'm not talking about the fundamental physics changing. I'm talking about what is the research we're doing and why and who has the right to be curious.